Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Chof Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Chof Zayin, we notice a Mishnah. Before getting into the actual text, let us glance at the outside margin where we have a topic heading, the Nosei. In our Gemara marking system, the Shas Ozer, our pre-marked Gemaras, we attempt to provide topic headings, nosei, or nosim in the plural, for each new sugya, as well as when a structural note needs to be commented on, we have a mivneh, which refers to structure of sugya, in which we feature the geometric forms that appear from time, that appear regularly in our marking system. On this particular daf, if you scan ahead, you won't notice much by way of special geometric forms, but you will notice a great deal of underlining. The use of the underlining is to help enable to stand out the different phrases that are mentioned in the Mishnah and the different halachas or mitzvahs for which we will be seeking sources. Specifically, as we have written on the outside margin under the Nosei, Dvorim, we will see items, Shemiut Me'akev Esarov, where any amount that's required for the particular mitzvah, if any of it is missing, even a minor amount of material is missing, then the mitzvah cannot be fulfilled. And there's another point, Mitzvos Hamurkavos Mikamo Chalokim, we'll see mitzvahs that are made up of different parts, shekol echod me'akev, each unit is binding, that if you're missing it, that particular part, then the mitzvah will not be fulfilled. This Omid Gemara, even though it's broken down into two Mishnayas, the fact is that the second Mishnah that you see on this daf, in effect, is a continuation of the end of the first Mishnah on the daf. And we will be illustrating that through the method of numbering or lettering off the different lists of things. We will explain that when we get to it inside. Let's now turn to the Mishnah. Hakomets miuto ma'akev es rubo. The komets is the handful of the mincha, the meal offering. If any amount is missing from the handful of meal offering, so the Kometz is said to be choser, and one will not fulfill the obligation through a missing handful. And that's the concept of mi'uto ma'akev esrubo. Even if a mashu is missing, it's no good. Number two, isaron mi'uto ma'akev esrubo. Isaron is the amount, it's a dry measure, the amount of mincha that needs to be brought in the first place, initially, before the handful is taken. So you have to have a complete isaron. If any small amount is missing, so it's me'akev, it's binding. Number three, hayayin mi'uto me'akev es rubo. The wine that's brought along with different sacrifices, for example, a ram offering has a shlishis hahin, which is made of four lug of wine. A sheep offering has a revius hahin that comes along with it, three lug. And a cow has a chatsi hahin, a half, that's made of six lug that comes with it. So if any amount is missing, so he will not fulfill his requirement. Hashemen mi'uto ma'akev esrubo. Those sacrifices that require oil. If any amount of oil is missing, so he will not be in fulfillment of his obligation. We notice here a semicolon because the list now that the Mishnah presents deals with what we mentioned in our introduction, those mitzvahs or requirements that are made of different parts. You need to have each section or each part together. And we change the numbering here using letters now. Aleph, you can see here, the next line, Beis. And if you skip to the next Mishnah, you'll see it starts off with a Gimel, because in effect, it's a continuation of this list. In this case, the items are said to Ma'akvin Ze'ezeh. You'll see that expression repeated again and again. And this is different than the beginning, a list of this Mishnah on the top of the page, where the stress was on Mi'uto Ma'akevis Rubo. So as this list continues, it now is Ma'akvin Ze'ezeh, that each element is binding, that without which you are not in fulfillment. Hasoles vashemen, a meal offering is made of soles, of the flour and the oil. So you need to have both the flour and the oil to fulfill the requirement. Hence, ma'akvin ze'ezeh. Hakomets v'halavoyno ma'akvin ze'ezeh. The komets is the handful of the meal offering that's offered on the fire of the altar of the Mizbeach. In addition to the komets, levona is a type of spice. That's also bindings, that one without the other, one is not in fulfillment of his mincha obligation. The Gemara asks, my taima. We indicate a little one over my taima so as to tie this in with the one of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah spoke about the komets. If any flour is missing from the handful, then he is not in fulfillment. What's the reason for that? Omar kro, maloi kumtso. The pasuk says a handful trezimni. It says it twice, and the rule is when the Torah repeats something, it's there for binding purposes, to indicate it's binding. There's an expression shino alav hakosuv la'akev, that the pasuk repeats itself in order to show that something is binding. Rashi actually quotes the sources of where malo kumtso is found in the Torah. Continuing in the Gemara, isoron mi'uto ma'akev es rubo, and that we saw in the Mishnah, and hence we call this number two, my taima. What's the basis for that? Omakra mi'silto, and we learn from the hey she'im chosra kol shehu psula. Instead of saying misoles, it says misilta. And that hey tells me that if any amount is missing, so it's not in conformity with basic requirements, and hence one is not going to fulfill the mitzvah. Number three, hayayin mi'uto ma'akeves rubo. That's based on another word, kocha. That word appears in Parshas Shlach, in Sefer Bamidbar, in that word indicates that you have to do it just this way, and if there's anything missing, one is not in fulfillment. Number four, Hashemen mi'uto ma'akeves rubo. Now, shemen is found in different kinds of menachas. There are menachas that accompany animal offerings. Those are called minchas nesachim. And then there's a voluntary type meal offering that one brings without an animal accompanying it. And that too has shemen oil in it. So the Gemara breaks it down after the Mishnah has said, Hashemen mi'uto ma'akeves rubo, the issue is the shemen of what? So, de minchas nesachim, the shemen that's brought with the minchas nesachim, which we said was the meal offering that accompanies animal sacrifices, the word kocha in the Torah appears, indicating binding. And de minchas nedava, omakro, umishamna. In the case of the voluntary meal offering that also has oil that accompanies it, the word in the Torah is umishamna. Sheim chiser kol shu psula. And the word mishamno has this hey at the end, indicating that you have to have it. And if it's not there, if even if a minor amount is missing, it's not. He won't fulfill his mitzvah. Now we go to the second list, and here the lettering is used, and this corresponds with what you saw in the Mishnah. So Aleph. Here is a quote from the Aleph in the Mishnah. Hashemen v'hasoilos ma'akvin ze'ezeh. Where do we know that from? Well, the Torah says, misilta umishamna, migirsa umishamna. Girsa, Rashi explains, in effect is the same as Soles. It's just that the term Girsa used in the context of the Minchas HaOmer, which was a barley offering, but it's a reference to the flour. So you see that the Soles is also flour. Flour oil in effect is mentioned twice. So that's Shino Olav HaKosuv La'akev. The fact that it's repeated shows me it's binding. Hence, I have to have the solus and the shemen in order to fulfill the mincha requirement. Hakoymetz v'alavoynu makfin zeh. The pasuk says, al kol levoyna sa, v'es kol halavona asher al hamincha. So you have, once again, two psukim referring to the levona, and Rashi points out here as well, shino hakosuv la'akev, so that the levona, the presence of levona is binding in order to fulfill the mincha requirement. So in the case of a mincha, in addition to the handful that's placed on the fire, the levona is too. And if it's missing, he won't be in fulfillment. As we turn to the new Mishnah, you'll notice the gimel is used, because this in effect is the continuation of the list started in the previous Mishnah, where we mentioned ma'akvin ze'ezeh. And this is a very long list. What you can see, if you skim down, you'll see we've numbered off the test of 15 examples. The Gemara likewise will feature each one of these cases that the Mishnah mentions, and then give the source for what we're teaching right now. So, Shnei Sirei Yom HaKippurim Me'akvin Ze'ezeh. These are the two goats that are part of the Yom Kippur ceremony. One is slaughtered as a chatos, and the other is sent to a cliff to serve as atonement for the sins of Israel. So the two of them are necessary for the fulfillment of the Yom Kippur requirements. Shnei Kivsei Atzeres Me'akvin Ze'ezeh. These are the two sheep that are brought on the holiday of Shavuos. You need to bring two, and what, if only have one, so you're not fulfilling anything, because each one is ma'akev the other. Beis Chalas, this Beis Chalas is the Shtei Alechem that was brought with the Kivsei Atzeres on Shavuos. Now you need to have two loaves. One is not sufficient, and that's what's meant here, ma'akvois zu ezu. You can't have one without the other. Now, next, Vov. This is the sixth example of this list. Shnei Sidorim Ma'akvin Ze'ezeh. This is a reference to the Lechem Haponim. There were two stacks of bread. So you have to have two stacks. One without the other won't be of any value. Shnei Bozichin Ma'akvin Ze'ezeh. The Bozichin is an item we've mentioned numerous times in the past. This is a reference to the two vessels that held Levona that sat on the shulchan of the Lechem Abonim from week to week. So that you have to have two bozichin full of Levona. One without the other is not worth anything. They're ma'akev one another. Hasidorin va'bozichin ma'akvin ze'ezeh. As far as the shulchan and the Lechem Abonim, the Lechem Aponim has to have the Bozichin together with it, and the Bozichin have to have the Lechem Aponim. That, once again, if one of the two elements is missing, so you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah, in this case, of Lechem Aponim. Shnei Minim Shebenozir. This, you'll notice we have Tes, Yud, Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis appear in this list, and Yud Gimel as well. And then the Mishnah will say that in each one of these examples, they're Ma'akvin Ze'ezeh. So Tes is Shnei Minim Shebenozir. And Nozir brings a number of loaves of bread, loaves of baked goods, at the end of his Nezirus. They are called Chalois and Rikikin. They're two different kinds of preparations, and they're featured in Parshas Noso. So that the two Minim, the two kinds, are Ma'akev. So that if you have 10 loaves of Rikikin and 10 loaves of chalos, you've got to have both kinds there. Gimel Shebapora. Gimel Shebapora, Rashi explains, are the three elements that are needed during the Pora Aduma Taharo process. And they include the Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shni Toloas. The Eitz Erez is a piece of wood from an Erez tree, and an Ezov is a kind of plant, and Shni Tolas is a string that's dyed red. So these are three elements that are needed in the Pora Aduma Tahara process. The Dalad Shebetoida, those are the four different kinds of loaves that are brought as part of the Toda offering. That you have to have each kind present. The Dalad Shebelulav, those are the four minim of the lulav, the Esrog, Lulav, Hadasim, and Arovas. The Arba Shebemitzora, Me'akvin Ze'ezeh. The Arba Shemitzora includes, in addition to the eight eras, Ezov and Shni Tolas, the Mitzora, in the beginning of his purification process, there were birds that he brought as well. Not as sacrifices, but birds were processed outside of the city. That he was seated outside of the city. So those are the four elements of the Mitzora. Then each one is necessary. Shiva Hazos Shebepora Ma'akvo Zu Azu. The seven sprinklings of blood that took place during the preparation of the Pora Aduma are Ma'akev Zu Azu. You need to have all seven Hazos. And Zayin Hazoyas Sha'al Bein Habadim Sha'al Haporoches V'Sha'al Mizbeach Hazov. Here there are Tesvov in our listing. Here we've included three units that are really related one to the other. The seven sprinklings of blood that took place on Yom Kippur, Sha'al Bein Habadim, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, between the rods of the poles of the Oron HaKodesh. Sha'al HaParoches, there are seven blood sprinklings on the curtain. Sha'al Mizbeach Hazov, on the golden altar. And these sprinklings included not just Yom Kippur, but also the other Chatos HaPnimios. They had seven blood sprinklings on the Paroches and on the Mizbeach Hazov. They're Ma'akvois Zu Izu. Each one of the sprinkling is binding, without which you are not fulfilling the mitzvah. And what the Gemara does at this point is it goes through each one of the items mentioned in the Mishnah. We are going to attempt to use a lettering system to enable you to tie each line of Gemara back to the Mishnah. The Gemara. Shnei Si'irei Yom HaKippurim Me'akvin Ze'eseh. From where do we know this? Answer, Chukah. The word chukah or chok appears in the context of the Yom Kippur offerings, and that word indicates binding. Shnei kibsei atzeres ma'akvin ze'ezeh. From where do we know that? Havayo. The Torah uses a word indicating that it shall be just that way, like the word hoyo or tihyeh, indicating something that is binding. Shtei chalos, also havayo. Shnei sedorim. Chuka, Shnei Bozichin, Chuka, Hasdorim Vahabozichin, Chuka, Shnei Minim Shebenozir. We mentioned the two types of loaves, the two varieties of loaves. Dichtiv, Kain Ya'aseh, meaning thusly you must do it, and any missing one will not be in fulfillment. Shalosha Shebepora, the three ingredients or elements necessary for the Pora Aduma process. Chuka, Arbo Shebetoda, the four different kinds of loaves by the Toda. The Iskish Lenozir, we find in the Psukim, the word, the Korban Toda is compared to the Nozir. And by the Nozir, we already saw that each element is binding. Dichtiv, where do we find in the scriptures, in the Psukim, this comparison? The Pasuk says, Al Zevach Toidas Shlomov. The Omar Mar, and it has been taught, Shlomov, this Pasuk that features the Korban Toda, it mentions Shlomov, which is L'Rabois Shalmei Nozir. So that we see the topic of Shlomim, which we already established, every element is binding, and that we saw from the expression Kein Ya'aseh, and that is compared to the Toda, hence the four varieties of loaves are binding in the case of the Toda. Ve'arbo'o Shebemetzorah, the four elements necessary for the Metzorah Tahara. Dichtiv, Zois Tia Torah HaMetzorah. than the we saw above. The word tihye indicates that something is binding. The dalet shebelulav, the four minim of the lulav, are binding. Ulekachtem, the pasuk says ulekachtem lochem biyom harishon, and it mentions the pri eitz hadar v'kapois tamarim anaf eitz avois v'arvei nochal. So the word ulekachtem, in that word, the end of the word, you've got a tough mem indicating lekicha tama, complete taking. Each element must be there. Omar Rav Chonon bar Rava, loy shanu the halacha by lulav, that each variety is binding. This is taught only elo she'ein lo. That is only to the exclusion of a person who does not own each one of the minim of the lulav. He will not be in fulfillment. Aval yeshlo. Let us say you have a person that has, he owns each one of the elements of the lulav mitzvah, the esrog, lulav, hadasim, and aravos. He has them. Ein ma'akvin. Then it's not binding that he takes them all together at one time, bound together. It's not necessary for them to be bound together. Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source, and it says, Dalid minim shebelulav, the four varieties of the lulav. Shnayim mehen oisin peros, the lulav and the esrog are fruit producing. Ushnayim mehem, two of them, the hadas men aravos, ein oisin peros, are not fruit producing. Ha'oisin peros, you zukukin l'she'ein oisin. The lulav and esrog, the lulav comes from a date palm, so it's a fruit producer. The oisin peros, the lulav and esrog, you zukukin, means they must be together with the ein oisin, the hadas min arabas. V'she'ein oisin peros, you zukukin l'oisin peros. The ein odom yoytse yedei chavosu behen atshu kulon, and one is not in fulfillment of his mitzvah lulav unless they are all bound together. V'chein Yisrael b'hartso, and similarly on a idea comparison, you have the Jews when it comes to their need for prayer and atonement. That's hartso when they're trying to appease HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ad sheyu kulon ba'aguda achas. All the Jews must be together in seeking the heavenly assistance through prayer. Shenemar haboyne b'shamayim mal yosav va'agudoso al eretz yosda. Rashi explains when bizman shagudoso biachad oz yosda, when all the different kinds of Jews are together, and this includes the rishoyim as well, must be together with the all of the people in tefillah, so that only when everyone is together, then it's established. Then we have a chance. Then we will be established and have a hope for success. So that's indicated in this pasuk ba'agudasa. When everyone is agud together, bound together, then we are established. So from this source, you see, not like was suggested before by Rav Chonon bar Rava, that they don't have to be bound together. That if you have all four, it's sufficient that you own all four, and you take them, but they don't have to be bound together. In this source, we see that the four minim of lulav do have to be bound together. The Gemara answers, Tanoihi. This issue is a machlokes tanoim. Dichsanya, the source says, lulav, bein ogud, bein she'eno ogud kosher. Whether the four are bound together, technically speaking, really mean three are bound together and the esrog. So, whether they're bound together or not, kosher, he is in fulfillment. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ogud kosher, she'eno ogud posel. According to Rabbi Yehuda, they must be bound together. If not, then he is not in fulfillment. The Gemara now analyzes the reasoning behind the two opinions. You have the Tanakama, the Rabbanon, and you have Rabbi Yehuda. My Taimo, the Rabbi Yehuda. From where does Rabbi Yehuda know that they have to be bound together? Answer, Gomar kicho kicho me agudas ezov. He learns a gezerah shava from the agudas ezov. We saw this referred to before, the eitz eres ezov and shni talos, which are the three elements that must be bound together in the case of the processing of the poraduma. Ma lahalon ba'aguda, just like over there, they are bound together. There you have the word agudas ezov is mentioned, and you have the word ulakachta. Afkan, so to my lulav, where you have the word ulakachtem, even though you don't have the word aguda, but you have ulakachtem, through the word comparison, I see that lakicha means something bound together. So afkan, by the lulav, be'aguda, they have to be bound together. Rabbanan, lo gamri kicha kicha. The Rabbanan don't have a tradition of this gezera shava. Then, therefore, ulakachtem by itself does not indicate that something must be bound together. Kaman az loha desanya. The Gemara wants to know who is the author behind the following Tanaic source. Lulav mitzvah laogdo v'im lo ogdo kosher. When it comes to the lulav, it's a desirable thing to have them bound together, and if not, it still is kosher. Kaman, according to which Tana is this source? I k'Rabbi Yehuda lo ogdo amai kosher. If it were according to Rabbi Yehuda, how could it be suggested that if you don't bind it together, it would still be kosher? We saw that Rabbi Yehuda has a gzera shafa kicha kicha, from which he learned that they must be bound together. So there wouldn't be an option of saying lo ogdo kosher. E rabbonon my mitzvah. And if this source were according to the rabbonon, where is there an element of an expectation, a mitzvah that they should be bound together? The rabbonon said, as Rav Chanan bar Rava taught above, that there is, it's actually, and we also saw in a more recent brisa, which said lulav bein ogud bein she'eno ogud kosher. So what element of mitzvah is there? The Gemara answers, li'olam rabbonon. This source that says lulav mitzvah l'ogdo, that it's a fulfillment of an obligation, but not binding. That's how we'll have to translate mitzvah. This works out according to the Rabbanan. Umay mitzvah, what do you mean by a fulfillment of a commandment? When, after all, the Rabbanan said there was no commandment to have the lulav bound together. So he says, Mishum ze keli v'yamveo, because of this pasuk, which is found in the Shiras Hayam, which indicates, this is my kale, my God, and I will adorn him, so to speak. Anveu, I will show him glory and pleasantness. So when it comes to the taking of the lulav, it's more beautiful and praiseworthy if they are bound together. So even though, as far as the basic mitzvah of lulav is concerned, there is no need for it to be bound together. However, it is expected to be bound together in order to fulfill this aspect, ze keli anveya, which, by the way, is an expectation or a fulfillment that occurs in many different kinds of mitzvahs. Sheva hazos shebapora ma'akvos zu ezu. This refers to the seven sprinklings of the pora aduma blood opposite the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash while standing on the Mount of Olives, or the Har HaMashcha, Har HaZesim. Each one of these hazos is binding. And that's chukah, because of that word that appears in the context of the Poraduma. Sheva hazos sha'al bein habadim v'sha'al mizbeach hazov v'sha'al haparoches. The seven blood sprinklings that takes place between the poles of the Aron HaKodesh and the on the top of the golden altar and on the curtain of the Beis HaMikdash, that which separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKodashim, each one of these units has seven sprinklings. Ma'akvos zu ezu. Each sprinkling is binding. And now the Gemara goes over the sprinklings that we just mentioned, that you have Bein Abadim. Bein Abadim was something unique to Yom Kippur. So, Di Yom Kippur, Ksiv, Chukah. The sprinklings that are relevant to Yom Kippur, which had a Bein Abadim, it had a Mizbeach Azov, and a Poroches, each sprinkling is binding. That is learned from Chukah. Depar Kohen Moshiach, Moshuach, Udepar Helem Dover Shalzibur, Udesire Avodes Kechavim. These three korbonos did not have a Kodesh HaKodashim sprinkling, but the other sprinklings they had. The sprinklings on the Poroches and the Mizbeach Hazov. So those sprinklings are necessary. Each one is necessary, and if you're missing one, you will not be in fulfillment. That is learned from Kidisanyo, from the following source. So as far as Yom Kippur is concerned, we already gave the source. That was Chukah. As far as the Par Kohen Moshiach and the Par Helmdov HaShetzibar and Sirev HaLizchavim, that's derived from the following source. V'osa lapar kasher osa lapar. This pasuk is written in the context of the Par Helem Dover Shel Tzibor, and it says, you shall do the Par Helem like you did the previous mentioned Korban in the Torah, which happened to be the Par Kohen Moshiach. Ma Talmud Lomar, why is it necessary to tell me to process the Parah Duma like you do the Kohen Moshiach when the Torah informs me in the context of the Parah Duma itself how the blood is supposed to be sprinkled? So if I'm already told in the context of the Parah Duma itself how to do it, why is it necessary to tell me do it like you did the Par Kohen Moshiach? Answer, we'll call it this seeming redundancy, is lichpol behazois. It's to double the teaching of the hazois, shim chiser achas min hamatonis loy also klum, to tell me that if I'm missing any one of the sprinklings, I have not fulfilled my obligation. Tanu Rabbonon. We have a Tanaic source, and we're going to call this Tanaic source number one. There's a little Roman numeral number one that we've positioned strategically over the Parah, which in this case is a reference to the Parah Aduma. And there will be another source, a much shorter source that appears a few lines from now, listed as Roman numeral number two. There will appear to be a contradiction between the two sources. And the role of this Gemara is to resolve the seeming contradiction. Before we go further, let's take advantage of the Nosei Mivneh heading that we see in the outside margin. First of all, we see a reference made to Roman number 1 and 2. They are Shnei Makoros, two sources. Asoisros Zeh Ezeh Be'inyin Hazos De Parah Aduma She'enon Mechuvonos. The two sources will appear to be contradictory regarding the sprinklings of the blood of the Parah Aduma that are not positioned in proper alignment. That's Einon Mechuvanos. So the first source that we see, before we actually read the Gemara, let's take advantage of the markings and see, and let's try to see the actual contradiction. So in the first source, and we're looking at the second line from the top of the Omid, you see Pora is underlined, and we see a dashed underline under the expression right under that, Shelo Mechuvanos. And another type of a different type of dashed underlining under the word psuos that appears right below that. So if we isolate the necessary information for right now, you see that hazos that are shalom chuvanos in the case of the Parah Aduma are it's posel, it's not acceptable. Then we have a second source, if you can see, where there's a Roman numeral number two, and we're talking about six lines from the top of the page, a source concerning again Parah Aduma. And it says in that source, just focusing on the markings, Shalom Chuvanois Ksheros. So right away you see a contradiction. Turning to the Gemara, Sheva Hazos, She Bepora, the seven sprinklings that one does, and will in this case the seven sprinklings appears by Parah Aduma, it appears by the Chatos HaPnimios, and there is also a series of seven sprinklings when it comes to the Metzora, where the oil of the Metzora is sprinkled in the direction of the Heichal. But each example has seven sprinklings. So the source tells us, Sheba Parah, the seven sprinklings involving the Parah Aduma, Shason Bein Shalom Lishmon, Bein Shalom Mechuvanos, whether he did them without the proper kavana. He wasn't thinking. He was thinking about something else. That's shelo lishma, or he was doing it shelo mechuvanos. They were not directed. And he mentioned this a little bit rapidly in passing earlier. The Parah Aduma, after it was shechted on the Mount of Olives, on the Har HaMashcha, the blood was then taken to a certain point opposite the on the Mount of Olives, which was actually to the east of the Beis HaMikdash. So he would stand on this mountain and face the Beis HaMikdash. He would face the eastern side of the Beis HaMikdash and sprinkle the blood in that direction. So the second source says that if the sprinklings were done, before we go on, let's just finish off the first source. It says v'shebifnim v'shebimetzora, the sprinklings of blood that take place in the heichal, or the oil sprinklings of the metzora that are shelo lishmon psulos. If it's done without proper kavona, it's not acceptable. Shelo mechuvonos ksheros. So in this latter part, if it's shelo mechuvonos, if they're not positioned properly, it's still okay. But we want to focus on the contradictory point that will be featured momentarily. The Gemara goes on to say, "Votanyo gabi pora." We have a Tanaic source featuring the pora aduman. We're calling this source number two, and it says shelo lishmon psulos. That is the same as what the first source taught. However, shelo mechuvanos ksheros. If the sprinklings of the blood are not aligned facing the Beis HaMikdash, it's still okay. The contradiction has been presented. How do we resolve this contradiction? So we have a triangle around Rav Chisda. He represents the first attempt to resolve the contradiction. You will notice at the bottom line a triangle again, number two. And Rava will be doing the same, has the same task as is to resolve the two sources. In the meantime, Omar Rav Chisda, lo kashya, there is no contradiction between the two sources, ha Rebbe Yehuda, ha Rabbanan. One source is according to Rebbe Yehuda, and the other source is according to the Rabbanan. According to Rebbe Yehuda, we see in a different context that the Pasuk uses the word El, and the El means it has to be exactly that way. Therefore, El Nochach, that you find by the Pora Aduma, indicates it must be done exactly that way, in an aligned fashion. That will be according to Rebbe Yehuda. So the source that indicates Shelo Mechuvanos Psulos, we will assign to Rebbe Yehuda. The source that says Shelo Mechuvanos Ksheros, that we will be able to associate with the Rabbanan. You'll notice that between answer one and number two, there's a lot of Gemara text, a lot of material till we get to the second approach. Let us start the Gemara and then make some further comments in a little while. In the meantime, Rav Chisda says there is no contradiction. One source is according to Rabbi Yehuda, the source that indicated Shalom Uchuvanos Psulos. That was the first source, and the second source will be according to the Rabbanan. Tesanya, the Gemara's role now is to bring the background for saying, or to for our setting up the sources and assigning a name to each one. This source does not deal with the sprinklings of blood. But in the source we will see the Rabbanan and Rebbe Yehuda, and we will see how they darshan psukim to come to their respective positions in this other topic. And then we will tie the two topics together, and then we'll go over how Rav Chisda resolves the contradiction. So Rav Chisda cites this source, Desanya, Mechusre Kapora Shenichnusu Lazora, people that have an obligation to bring a sacrifice in order for them to finish their tumah experience. Those people, not every tumah experience requires the bringing of a sacrifice, but those kinds of tumah that do, until they bring the korban, they are called mechusrei kapara. They are lacking atonement in the form of a korban. So if someone like that had not brought his korban yet, shenichnesu lazora, mechusrei kapara, that enter the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, well, b'shogeg, if they were not aware of the tumah problem, if they weren't aware that they were doing something wrong, chayav chatos, they will have to bring a a sin offering. But mazid, if someone did it knowingly, he was aware of either it being the Beis HaMikdash, or he was aware that he was tamei, and he entered anyway. So onush kores. And it goes without saying that the Tfuyom certainly will be guilty of these things. The Tfuyom is a situation where a person had been Tomei, went to the mikveh, and before sunset of that day, or which represents the end of his Tumah period, before sunset, he is called a Tfuyom. That's namely after the mikveh, before sunset. If he entered the Beis HaMikdash, he certainly would be guilty. Ushar kol hatmeim utahorim shenichnasu lifnin mimichitzasan. All other characters, even tohor people, that entered the Beis HaMikdash lifnin mimichitzasan. Let's reread this this Mishnah. This Tanaic source. We just finished reading Ein Tzorch Lomar Tvul Yom. We should add to that Ushar Kol HaTameim, Tvul Yom, and certainly other Tameim that have not yet gone to Mikveh. They certainly will be guilty of entering the Beis HaMikdash, namely if a Mechutzer Kippurim, which is a relatively speaking low-level Tumah problem, enters and is chayav koreis if he does it b'mezid, then certainly the tfuyom and other tameim. Then there's another topic, and that's the tahorim, people that are actually tor, so that their entrance to the Beis HaMikdash is not a tumah related matter. However, even people that are tor that enter the Beis HaMikdash but go beyond the allowed boundaries for tor people get themselves involved with problems as well. So the source tells us, Utahorim Shelechsu Lifnim Mimichitzasan, the Mechitzah is the boundary. For a Yisrael, he has 11 Amos from the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash, from the eastern entrance to the Azora, plus 11 Amos, that's called the Mokom Drisas Ragli Yisrael, the place that the Yisraelim were allowed to walk. So if he went lifnim mimichitzasan, further in, that's one problem. Lahechal is number two. Lahechal kulo, or he enters the hechal. If he does it b'mezid, be'arboyim, he's subject to 40 lashes. Technically speaking, 39 lashes. Number three, mibeis laporoches, that's an expression indicating that he entered the Holy of Holies. And a fourth situation, el pnei hakaporos, not only is he in the Holy of Holies, the section of the Hechal in which the Kodesh HaKodashim is located, but Pnei HaKaporos means he is facing the Oron Mamish. So cases 3 and 4 are situations that he's in the Kodesh HaKodashim, just the 3 he's not facing the Oron Kodesh, 4 he is. Those cases are B'misa. They're subject to a heavenly imposed death. Rabbi Yehuda, he's more lenient, and he says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol hechal kulo u mi beis laporoches ba'arboyim. Not only is the hechal guilty of, one who enters it is guilty of lashings, but even entering the Kodesh HaKodashim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, will not result in misa necessarily, just 40 lashes. The El Pnei HaKaporos, only that case where he not only entered the Kodesh HaKodashim, but he's also facing the Oron HaKodesh, he is B'misa. We have a bracketed section here, a very long section. These brackets are explained in the inside margin. Let's read our note. Sograyim Elu Shehem L'Shem Dilug, these brackets, which indicate that the section contained within should be skipped initially, Me'afshirim enable Lirois Miad HaHezber, will enable us to see immediately the explanation, B'ha DeHeshiva HaGemara Le'el, with regard to the answer the Gemara gave before, specifically Rav Chisda, Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Ha Rabbanan. We want to see how the sources above, with regard to the sprinklings of the Paraduma blood, Shelo Mechuvanos, they were the sprinklings that were not aligned. We said, one, the source that said Psulos is according to one opinion, and the source that said Ksheros is according to the other, and we assigned the names Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan. We will be able to see this immediately by skipping the bracketed section, Kedei Liyashev Shnei Amakoros Dileel, the assignment of these two names to the two sources will help us resolve the two sources we saw before, Be'inyan Hazos Paraduma Shalom Mechuvanos, regarding the unaligned Paraduma sprinklings. Besocha Sograyim, within the bracketed section, Nimtzo Hezber L'machlokes Rabbanu Rabbiuda Ha'im Oynish Misa Hudafko Al Knisa El Pnei HaKapores O Afilu Mibeis LaParoches. Within the brackets, there will be a discussion concerning, is the Misa limited to Pnei HaKaporas alone, or even Mibeis LaParoches, or for entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim as well. We've also added, Bosis LaSograim Elu, a basis for the use of these brackets, can be found in Rashi, Dibra Maschil Ha, Rabbi Yehuda, and also another Rashi later on the page, Dibra Maschil, Ze Bono Av. Turning now to the Gemara, what did we just do? Rav Chisda said that the two sources regarding Paraduma and Zrikos Dam Shalom Mechuvanos that seem to be contradictory, one is according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the other is according to the Rabbanan. If we skip the bracketed section momentarily, we find ourselves at a diamond by Rabbi Yehuda, surrounding Rabbi Yehuda, five lines from the bottom. Let's read the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar, El Pnei HaKaporas Davka. Rabbi Yehuda's shita was that only Pnei HaKaporas will result in Misa, and that was brought out in the Gemara contained within the brackets. But for our purposes, it's sufficient just to see that Rabbi Yehuda takes the word El, of the Pasuk El Pnei HaKaporas, and says that that is specific, or it's to be taken at face value or literally, meaning only the case of Pnei HaKaporas will result in Misa. So the pasuk that you find by Paraduma, which says V'hizah El Nochach, that the sprinkling must be done specifically opposite the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash. While standing on the Mount of Olives, one must be facing opposite the eastern entrance to the Beis HaMikdash. So, that also is Dafka, indicating that if one does a Shelo Mechuvanos, if the sprinkling is not aligned, so it will not be in fulfillment. That's why we said that the source that says Psulos, which was Roman numeral number 1 above, that fits in with Rabbi Yehuda's approach. V'Rabbanan, Midahosam Lav Dafka, the Rabbanan, who explained that entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim can result in Misa, and the fact that it said El Pnei HaKaporas is Lav Dafka, it's not to be taken literally or in an exclusive fashion, but rather Misa could include the case of entering as well, even if you're not literally opposite the Oron. So just like over there, the El Pnei HaKaporas, the El word, was Lav Dafka, wasn't specific. Hochanami, when it comes to the hazos, the sprinklings of the Paraduma, lav dafka. The hizo el nochach is not to be taken in a literal or limiting specific fashion. And therefore, if the sprinklings were shelo mechuvanos, in the case of the Paraduma, it would also be okay. This is the time now to go back over all of the Gemara. But what we've tried to accomplish with our use of the brackets was to show that Rav Chisda's explanation of, or his resolution of the two sources based on Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, how that is done, you see only at the point in the Gemara that you get to the point after the brackets. This idea is featured in Rashi in a very succinct fashion, but we made reference to this Rashi in our introduction, We've also dashed underlined the expression in the Rashi 5 lines from the bottom, toward the end of the line where Rashi says "V'hashto meforish lahai de amoron li'el har Rav Yehuda har Rabbanon." Only late in the Gemara will it explain what Rav Chisda meant when he said one is according to the Rav Yehuda and the other is according to the Rabbanon. So let's now go back to the beginning of the bracketed section. Even though we've given quite a bit of introduction already, let's look at the nosei, the topic heading that accompanies this sugya that we've written on the outside margin. The nosei, chiyuv v'oinesh al knisas tahurim me'ever l'mekoimam. The penalty that's given to people that are tahor, that are ritually pure, however they go beyond their allowed boundaries. Now the issue of boundaries include lifnim miyud aleph amos shalragli Israel. That means they step over their azora boundary. Then there's a more severe situation of them entering the heichal, the enclosed portion of the Beis Hamikdash, and b'kodesh hakodashim. And even within the kodesh hakodashim, we make a distinction between mibeis laparochas, which simply means being inside the curtained area, namely you're in the chamber that houses the aron. And there's the next situation of El Pnei HaKaparos. That's a situation where not only did he enter the Kodesh Kodashim, but he's also facing the Aron Bris Hashem. Turning to the text of the Gemara, B'mai Komithli, we're looking at the Gemara at the very beginning of the bracketed section. We might want to note that the bracket length indicator marking, you see a vertical dashed dotted line to the immediate left-hand side of Gemara text. That's placed in Gemaras that have bracketed sections in order for one can see where the beginning and end of the brackets are written. So the Gemara at the beginning of the brackets, B'mai Komiflugi. What's the basis of the machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Huda? And if we focus our machlokas, it's the case of a tohor entering the Kodesh HaGadoshim without his actual facing the Aron. And that is the case in which the Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim disagree, where Rabbi Huda happens to be mekil with regard to that. It's maybe ironic, but the Rabbi Huda may be mekil over there, but when it comes to the dinim of the Parah Adumah, he is going to come out to be the machmir. So the Gemara asks, "B'mai komifli?" What's the underlying point of difference or machlokis, the reason behind those machlokis? Answer, "B'hai kraw." It's based on their interpretation of the following pasuk. The following pasuk is approximately 4 lines in length, as we read in the Gemara. "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, daber el Aaron ochicha, ve'al yovoi b'chol eis, el hakodesh, mibeis vaporoches, el pnei hakaporas, asher al ha'aron, velo yomus." So this pasuk is addressing eventually Aaron, and he's to be instructed not to enter the Beis HaMikdash, and specifically the Heichal, just whenever. What places are alluded to in this pasuk? So we've underlined some the key expressions. We have El HaKodesh, we have an expression Mi Beis Laporoches, and an expression El Pnei HaKaporas. Now the Shitas. We use diamonds to help emphasize the Tanaic opinions in this sugya. So Rabbonon Savri El HaKodesh equals Belo Yavo, that entering the area called El HaKodesh, that's beyond the 11 Amos that the Yisrael is allowed to be in, so he goes further in the courtyard, so he's Belo Yavo, means the pasuk we just read said the al yavo, meaning there's a lav, there's a negative commandment. Mi beis laporoches ve'el pnei hakaporas. We're dealing within the shitas of Rabbanan. They hold that any entrance to the kodesh hakodashim, even if it's not facing the aron, that could lead to a misa bidei shemaim. Of course, when we say any entrance, we're obviously to the exclusion of Yom Kippur when he's supposed to go in there. But if he's going in there at a time he's not supposed to go in there, so it's below yomus, meaning that stay out, and then lo yomus, and then not die. But if one doesn't stay out, then he will be guilty of misa bidei shamayim. Rabbi Yehuda savar, Rabbi Yehuda learns this pasuk as follows: El hakodesh umi beis laparoches equals below yavo. When the pasuk said al yavo b'chaleis, it's not just the expression next to it el hakodesh, but he includes the phrase after that, namely the mi beis laparoches. And all of this you can see and navigate with the underlinings that we imposed on the phrases in the pasuk just like 3-4 lines above from this point. And the El Pnei HaKaporas, that is below Yomus. Rabbi Yehuda is telling only that case of entering the Kodesh Hashem and facing the Aron Bris Hashem, facing the Holy Ark, that would result in Misa Bidei Shemayim. At this point, we have another marking, the double underline, where we ask my time at the Rabbanon, and later, when you see the next double underlining on the second wide line, Rebuta my time all. So we want to see how each one of these, even though we already cited how we cited where each one sees his particular opinion in the pasuk, but the Gemara wants to know, in effect, why does each one say what he does and not say like the other one? So, my time of the Rabbanon. Why is it that the Rabbanon come to their conclusion that there's Misa Bidei Shemayim upon mere entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So, they answer, Isaka Daitoch Kideka Omar Rabbi Yehuda, if one is to think like Rabbi Yehuda says, that only El Pnei HaKaporas is B'misa, and Mibes LaParochas would be B'lav, would be a negative violation, and that's it, then Lichtoiv Rachmana, the Torah could have written as follows, El HaKodesh, the El Pnei HaKaporas. It could have written the two extremes, so to speak, situation 1 and situation 3. It could have written El HaKodesh, that would be B'lav, and El Pnei HaKaporas, that's B'misa. V'lo boi mi beis laparochas. And if Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanon are saying that if Rabbi Yehuda was correct, there really was no need to write mi beis laparochas. Now, what was Rabbi Yehuda's shita with mi beis laparochas? That was Chayav Malkus. Well, I could have figured that on my own. V'ano amino, I would have said on my own. Hechal mechayev. Entering the Hechal, there's a chiyuv of Malkus. Mi beis laparochas mi bayo. for entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there certainly would be a chiyuv of Malkus. So would I need to be told that? Does the Torah have to spell that out? Mi beis haparoches, tegoz rachmano lomali. So why does the Torah write mi beis haparoches, namely entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Shma mino b'miso. The fact that the Torah writes it, it must be that it's trying to tell me something I would not have been able to think on my own, namely that there is a chiyuv misa as well. Namely, not Malkus, but we will give him the more severe, he will get the more severe penalty, namely Misa Bidei Shemayim. Rabbi Yehuda, now, Rabbi Yehuda responds, E Kosav Rachmona El HaKodesh, V'lo Kosav Mi Beis LaParoches, had the Torah done like the Rabbanan just suggested to Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, they said that if Rabbi Yehuda was correct, then the Torah would have not written the base of Rabbi Yehuda says the Torah could not have gone without writing that, because had it written just El HaKodesh, Have Amino my Kodesh, what is Kodesh? I would have thought Kodesh is mi beis laparoches, that means entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Aval Hechal Lav Nami Lo. But as far as the Hechal is concerned, the entrance to the Hechal part of the enclosed area, the Hechal meaning the place where the menorah and the Mizbeach Hazov and the Shulchan was located, there wouldn't be even a Lav associated with that. Therefore, the Torah could not have left out Mi Beis LaParoches. It had to write El HaKodesh to indicate that entrance to the Hechal also carries with it a Lav. V'Rabbonan, Hahu lo motzis amris. The Rabbonans say that Rabbi Yehuda's worry is not something that has any basis. that Hahu, namely that Hechal, that the Hechal should be Potter, and therefore there was a need to write Mibeis Laporoches, so that I wouldn't misconstrue Kodesh to mean that, the Rabbanan say that would not have ever arisen. Let's go over this again. The Rabbanan say that to think that the Hecha would have been Potter Legamri, that could not have been thought of. Why? He says, Ahu lo mosis amris, the Hechal kulo ikri Kodesh, because we find that the Hechal is called Kodesh. The Hechal itself is called Kodesh. So that if the Torah would have written El HaKodesh without writing Beis Laparoches, I would not have misconstrued the Kodesh to mean Beis HaKaporos, because the word because the word Kodesh itself refers to the Hechal. Shenemar v'hivdilo haporoches lebein v'hivdilo haporoches lochem bein haKodesh lebein Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is a clear reference to the term Kodesh is a clear reference to the Hechal. So that what Rabbi Yehuda had said would have led to a problem, namely, had the Torah not written Mibeis Laparoches, I would have thought that Kodesh is only the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I would not have thought like that. Rabbi Yehuda, my time all? Rabbi Yehuda, who said that only El Pnei HaKaporos results in Misa, how does he come to that? If one were to think that you would understand the pasuk like the Rabbanan, that even Mibeis Laparoches would be b'misa, then lichtav rachmona, let the Torah write El HaKodesh, Umibeis Laparoches, v'lo boi El Pnei HaKaporos. The Torah could have featured El HaKodesh, and it could have featured me Beis Laparoches and tell me that Beis Laparoches is b'misa, and I would not have had to say anything about El Pnei HaKaporos. V'anu amino, I would have figured on my own. Me Beis Laparoches b'misa, El Pnei HaKaporos mibaya. Would I need to be taught that at all? It would be very obvious. El Pnei HaKaporos does Rechmono Lomali. So why does the Torah bother writing El Pnei HaKaporos? So it must be Shma Mino, it's telling me El Pnei HaKaporos b'misa. Namely, only El Pnei HaKaporos is b'misa. Mibeis Laparoches, however, entrance to the Kodesh Kodoshim without facing the Aron, that's be'azhora. And that, in fact, is how Rabbi Yehuda comes to his conclusion. Namely, from the fact that the Torah wrote that which otherwise I would have thought was unnecessary to write, specifically El Pnei HaKaporos, comes to tell me that only El Pnei HaKaporos is Chayev B'misa. V'Rabbanan? Well, what about the Rabbanan? V'Rabbanan, Hochinami, Delo Tzorech. According to the Shitas Rabbanan that held that that Mibeis Laparoches itself was B'misa, why does the Torah write El Pnei HaKaporos? Facing the Aron, that's obvious. You can't come to a case of facing the Aron without having entered the Kodesh HaKodashim. So the Rabbanan say, Hochinami, the lo tzorach, v'hai dekosim rachmona, El Pnei HaKaporos, the Torah including El Pnei HaKaporos, it's not including that to tell me that it alone is b'misa, but rather, limute derech meshubash. It's coming to teach me that only if you enter it in the normal way, you enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the normal way, then there will be a chi of misa, as opposed to a derech meshubash, which would be a crooked way or a strange way. Rashi explains lemute derech meshubash kagon meshubash, same as the word meshubash, which means messed up. Shechosar hachoyma shelifnei lifnim v'asa pesach b'dorom o b'tzafon. He simply a guy who dug his way into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, not going through the Heichal and entering in a normal fashion, but he dug his way under the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and entered that way. That's called Derech Meshubash. So the expression of El Pnei HaKaporos is not, according to the Rabbanan, is not telling me only that is Chayav Misa, because even El Mibeis La Poroches is Chayav Misa. entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim is Chayav Misa as well. So then why does the Torah emphasize El Panei HaKaparos? It's to tell me that if a person enters in this unusual way, he is not guilty. Kidetana Devei Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, El Panei HaKaparos Kedma. Ze Bono Av. This teaches a rule. In other words, the pasuk that says El Panei HaKaparos Kedma teaches me a rule. Kol Mokom Shenemar Panei. Any time you see the word Panei, Eino Elo Panei Kodim. It's a reference to eastward. So the point of this brice is telling me that the only way that one would be chayav Misa is if he enters from the east, from the eastern entrance, which is from the Kodesh into the Kodesh Kodoshim, going in that direction, and not digging in from one of the other walls. Rabbi Yehuda, Lema Kro Panei. Now, Rabbi Yehuda's response to this whole issue, remember, let's not forget, Rabbi Yehuda said that El Panei HaKaporas was coming to teach me that only that is Chayav Misa, only the case where he enters and actually faces the Aron. Now, what about the Rabbanan's teaching that they need El Panei HaKaporas to tell me the halacha of normal entrance, and any other entrance would not result in Misa? So Rabbi Yehuda responds, Lema Kro Panei. Let the Torah simply have written Panei. My El. What is the significance of saying El Panei? Shma Mino El Dafka. The word El in this pasuk, El Panei HaKaporas, teaches me that only that case will be B'misa. V'Rabbanan El Lav Dafka. The Rabbanan don't see the word El as a limiting factor. In other words, El does not teach me something very specific. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the word El told me something very specific, namely only this case, specifically this case where he enters the Kodesh Kodashim and faces the Aron, where he's facing the Aron, that's the case where there would be Misa. V'Rabbi Yehuda de Omar El. Now at this point, as we said in our introduction, now the Gemara will tie in the sugya of entering Kodesh HaKadoshim to the resolution of the two sources concerning the unaligned sprinkling of the Pora Aduma blood. Therefore, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar El Panei HaKaporas is Dafka, where the word El appears, it tells me only that case, it's a limiting expression. Therefore, Vihiza El Nochach Nami Dafka. When it comes to the sprinkling of the Pora Aduma, it's also a limiting word, El Nochach, it's limiting, only if you do it facing the eastern gate. Only then will you be in fulfillment. V'Rabbanan Midahosam Lav Dafka, in the case of the halacha concerning entering the Heichal, or entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we saw that it's not only the case of facing the Aron that results in Misa B'nei Shemayim, but even mere entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim results in Misa B'nei Shemayim. So just like over there, the Rabbanan say, in the case of entering Lav Dafka, the El Panei HaKaporos was not a limiting expression. Hochanami, so too with regard to the Hazos, even though the Torah says you shall sprinkle them facing the eastern side of the Beis HaMikdash, it's Lav Dafka, it's not limited to that case. And therefore, even if there would be Shelo Mechuvanos, the Paraduma sprinkling would be okay. And the Shitas Rabbanan, therefore, is associated with Roman numeral number 2 at the upper part of the page, where it said, Shelo Mechuvanos Ksheros. And that's an outgrowth of the fact that El Nochach is not taken literally and specifically facing. Maskif Law Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises a question. Notice that we have a colon here. Le Rav Yehuda, according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, and don't misread the Gemara and say Maskif Law Rav Yosef Le Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef lived hundreds of years after Rav Yehuda, so he can't be addressing a question to Rav Yehuda, but he's addressing a question concerning the opinion of Rav Yehuda. So he says, Le Rav Yehuda, according to the approach of Rav Yehuda, Mide El Dafka, just like the word El was a limiting expression, and that was in the context of, we saw El Nochach Panei habayis, and we have that the sprinklings have to be specifically opposite the eastern gate, and also el penei hakaporas, only in that case is there misa. So just like the Rabbi Yehuda takes the word el to mean something specific and limiting, al, the word al that appears in the context of the sprinklings of the blood on the oron, on the Kodesh Kodashim during Yom Kippur. So too, are you going to tell me that al nami davka, that the word al, where it says al hakaporas, is also davka, only that way? Well, elo demikdash sheni delo hava oron v'kaporas ochinami delo ved hazos. When it came to the second temple, the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, the second Beis Hamikdash period, where there was no oron and kaporas, are you going to tell me there was no Yom Kippur blood sprinklings in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? In the second Beis Hamikdash, there was a Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was an inner sanctum, and simply the Oron and Kaporos were not there. They were hidden toward the latter part of the first Beis Hamikdash period by Yoshio HaMelech. So the question is, are you going to tell me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, just like the word El is a limiting expression, so too Al is a limiting expression? And if that be the case, in Bayis Sheni, where you didn't have an Al Panei Hakaporas to Mekayim, are you going to tell me that there were no blood sprinklings in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur in Bayis Sheni? And that can't be. The Gemara in Yuma tells us that there were sprinklings in Bayis Sheni. So how is Rabbi Yehuda to understand, after darshaning El to mean something limiting or specific, Al also should be that? Omar Rabo Bar Ula Omar Kro. He explains, based on the pasuk that says V'chiper es mikdash hakodesh. This pasuk is in the context of Yom Kippur. And the expression mikdash hakodesh means mokom hamekudosh lekodesh. The sprinklings are to take place in a location that is sanctified for that which is holy. So what's the area that is sanctified for that purpose? That's the spot in the Kodesh HaKadoshim that if there was an Aron, you would place the Aron there. And if there's no Aron, nevertheless, you still do the sprinklings on that site that's designed or specified for the Aron. And the Rashi points that out at the bottom of the page, Mokom HaMekudosh LeKodesh, Aron, the Kodesh is the Aron, Al Mokom HaAron Mazeh, on the spot that would have been occupied by the Aron, you do the sprinklings. Afilu Lek Aron, even if there is no actual Aron. The Torah's concern is the place that's fit to have the Aron. Rava, we notice a triangle around Rava, and this is a throwback to what we said in our introduction, that this is a second attempt to resolve the sources 1 and 2 at the upper part of the page. Rava says, Ha v'ha Rabbanan. He doesn't set one up like Rabbi Yehuda and the other like Rabbanan. He says both sources are according to the Rabbanan. Now, how can that be? How is it possible that you can say lo mechuvanos is kosher and on the other hand say lo mechuvanos is posel and be the same shita? Well, it all depends. Ha dekoi b'mizrach u ma'arov v'odi. If he's physically facing east-west and does the sprinkling, that will be okay, even if it's not literally opposite the entrance to the eastern gate of the Beis Hamikdash. However, ha dekoi tzofon v'dorom. This is a situation where he's basically he is facing north-south, where the side of his body is facing the Beis Hamikdash. But when he's sprinkling, he's not sprinkling in the direction of the Beis Hamikdash whatsoever. He's sprinkling in a perpendicular fashion, if you will. And in that case, the source that says Shalom Chuvanos Psulos will apply. At this point, the Gemara quotes that which was mentioned on Chof Zayin Omer Aleph. We've provided a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the text in order for you to be able to find where this quote is coming from. But the Gemara here will also present, just like the Gemara did on Amud Aleph, a contradiction between two sources. The same will appear here, but of course referring to a different part of the source. So this is coming from the Seifa of that source on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. It said, Shebifnim v'shebimitzora. The sprinklings of blood that are done in the Heichal and the oil sprinklings that are characteristic of the Mitzora, Shelo Lishmon Psulos, Shelo Muchuvanos Ksheros. So the first source says that if they're done without proper intent, it's not acceptable. Ah, V'hotanya, regarding the Mitzora, it says, Bein Shelo Lishmon, Bein Shelo Mechuvonos Ksheros. Let's focus on our markings. You see the expression here in the second citation, Shelo Lishmon, and a dash underline under the expression Ksheros. Compare the two sources. The first source, you have Shelo Lishmon Psulos. The second source says Shelo Lishmon Ksheros. That's a contradiction. You'll notice we have a house marking. This house marking is explained on the outside margin under the Nosei Mivne heading. The houses are Shnei Tirutzim, two answers, Liyashiv Stirub Inyan Osham Metzera Shehizu Ez Domoi Shelo Lishma. The attempt to explain the sprinkling of the Osham that was done Shelo Lishma. But we should be a little more careful here in our introduction. We said liyashiv stira binyan osham shehizu shelo lishmo. As far as the issue of the blood is concerned, this will be alluded to in the Gemara. But when we talk about the osham, when we talk about the mitzora sprinklings, we're talking about the oil of the mitzora that needed to be sprinkled while standing in the eastern gate of the Beis Hamikdash, and a sprinkling of the oil toward the direction of the Heichal took place. So, how do we resolve this contradiction? Omar Rav Yosef, Lo Kashya Ha Rabbi Eliezer, V'ha Rabbonan. And this will be explained. Rabbi Eliezer de Makish Osham Lechatos. Rabbi Eliezer is a Shita, and he's featured in the first mission of Masechet Zevachim, and he says that just like a Korban Chatos that's done Shelo Lishma is possible, he says a Korban Osham also done Shelo Lishma is possible. So he compares an Osham to a Chatos. So Rabbi Eliezer, who compares Osham to Chatos, Makishnami Lug L'Osham, he will compare the oil sprinkling to the standard applied to the Osham sprinkling. And therefore, just like the Osham sprinkling, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if it's Shelo Lishma is possible, so to the oil sprinkling of the Mitzora. We should point out the Mitzora brings a Korban Osham and an oil offering. So the oil is compared to the Osham. And the Osham had been compared to the Chatos, leading to the conclusion that Shelo Lishma in all of those cases would be unacceptable. Rabbonon lo makshi. The Rabbonon don't make this comparison. Therefore, according to the Rabbonon, Shelo Lishma by the Shemen Metzora would be okay. The Gemara asks a question on this presentation of Rabbi Eliezer. Ula Rabbi Eliezer. Can it be that something that is derived through a hekesh, in this case the osham, was derived through its being compared to a chatos? There's a rule in the realm of kochim, in the realm of sacrifices, that one does not take an item that is itself derived and use it as a source for something else. So the could it be that a dover halomei behekish, the case is the osham that was derived from the chatas, choser umalamei behekish, that the osham now serves as a source to teach me a third topic, namely the lug? We have a little illustration on the side in order to see this visually. On the inside margin, we have a little chart called bimitzora. Chatos teaches me to osham, and osham then teaching me to lug. This would be unacceptable. This is called Dover Halami Behekish, is Eno Choser Malami Behekish. Elo Omar Rava. So, being that we can't explain the source that said Shalolishma will be, Shalolishma by the Lug will be based on Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, the Rava comes up with his resolution. Ha v'ha Rabbanon. Both sources that speak about the Hazos, Shemen, Mitzorah, Shalolishma are according to the Rabbanon. How can it be that one source says that Shalolishma is possible and the other Shalolishma is okay? It depends what your goal is. Kan lahachshir. Lahachshir means to enable the balance of the lug of oil to be eaten. In order to achieve a heter of eating the balance, the shirayim of the lug, even if the sprinklings are done Shalolishma, it will be kosher. Kan lahartzois. If we're talking about the client, the mitzora, fulfilling his obligations, if it's done shalolishma, he will not be meratze, won't fulfill his obligations. This is explained in the Rashi. You see, there's a Rashi, laratzos. We have a little diamond around that word in the Rashi. Laratzos, lahazois, laalois, l'shem choiva u'lahatir mitzorah b'kohol posel shalo lishmon. In order for the mitzorah to fulfill his obligations and then be allowed to enter the community, if it's done shalo lishmon, if the oil sprinklings are done shalo lishmon, it won't be sufficient. The hadetonik sheros, the source that said the oil sprinklings of osham, if they're done shalo lishmon, it's okay, that's lahachshir. The hazoisov sheros lahachshir shiore halug b'achila. To enable the balance of the lug oil to be eaten, that's it's okay, even if it's done, the sprinklings were done, shalo lishma. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.